So, kia ora everyone. You're listening to Making Palmy Home on Manawatu People's Radio. I'm Lorna Johnson, and my guest today is Pooja. So, welcome Pooja, how are you?
I'm good. Kia ora and namaste. Thank you for inviting me to your show, Lorna.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for coming. Pooja, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing here in Palmerston North at the moment?
Yes. So I'm from India. I came to Palmerston North in 2019. So right now I'm working as a community advisor with the Department of Internal Affairs.
Right. Okay. And what brought you here? What was the particular thing that brought you to Palmerston North?
Yes. So back in 2019, I came in January. So I came to do my PhD in Massey University. So it was my dream to do my PhD. So it was a difficult situation back then because my husband passed away and I had a one-year-old back home. So he was with my parents. Then I had to make a choice of, moving forward and achieving my dreams. So I moved to New Zealand and Palmerston North to do my PhD.
Well, that was quite a big move and a difficult stage for you as well.
Yeah.
And had you been to New Zealand before? Was there something particular about New Zealand, or was it more what was offered at Massey that was what was attracting you?
Yes, it was more what I heard about Massey University and, the School of Communication and its rankings and, what it has to offer that, drove me to Palmerston North.
Right. Yeah. So with the reputation really of the department.
Yes.
Yeah. And so your field of study has been communications.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that and what it involves, because I'm not sure that everybody would necessarily know. And the reason I say this is that my son did a degree in communications, and lots of people think he works for telephone companies. So just tell us a little bit about the sort of work you've been doing and, simplify the PhD a bit maybe so that we can get an understanding of it.
So my PhD is on health communication. So my PhD looks at the health and well-being of migrant healthcare workers. So often, I'm looking at the people at the margins, who are left out, who are not invited to the tables or whose voices are not often heard. So I am exploring how, their health and well-being is affected in the healthcare sector, how their voices are not heard. And, there is a need for their voices to come up, especially because in our current scenario, the COVID scenarios, we often don't hear the voices of nurses or other healthcare workers just at the top. So I just wanted to, bring that aspect as well out in the public. Yeah,
that's very interesting. And I think, and possibly, as you say, it's an area that doesn't get much attention. But we do have a large migrant workforce in the nursing profession in New Zealand. Some of the voices that we do hear are not necessarily those on the front line, if you know what I mean. Is that what you're finding through your research?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And so were you working in that field in India?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was working mostly with communities that are marginalized, especially women, children and indigenous people in India called the Adivasi community and other, marginalized community. So I'm mostly passionate about community-led development, where communities, bring about solutions affecting their everyday lives rather than top-down approaches, which are far away from their everyday realities.
Yeah, absolutely. And with my other little council hat on, I totally understand where you're coming from on that. So what part of India are you from originally? And is that where you were living before you moved here?
Yes. So I'm from southern part of India.
Yeah.
I'm from a state called Kerala.
All right.
Yeah.
So I don't know about anyone else, but I'm very familiar with Kerala.
Yeah.
because for a start, I really like Kerala food. But secondly, because I know a number of people from Kerala in Palmerston North, so I think there must be quite a large Kerala community here. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you came, did you know other people who were here?
Actually, I didn't know many people.
Right.
So before I moved, I was looking for accommodation here. So I was applying randomly through TradeMe and all other sorts of things that I could find. But I was very unlucky. Like, I couldn't get anything because there was a need to have a proper good reference because I wasn't here before, like, you know, for a long time or anything. So I didn't, you know, meet that criteria and I didn't find any accommodation. And through Facebook, I found a person from my same state and I asked her, like, you know, I wanted to do my PhD and it's hard to get an accommodation in Massey. And she was, you know, she did offer a place in her house, like, because her friend was away in her home country and there was a space available for 2 months. So that's how I came in.
That was lucky. That the business about the references, that has come up so often in people I've been talking to.
Yeah.
Trying to get that first accommodation in New Zealand with no references of having been a tenant in New Zealand is extremely difficult. It seems to be a big barrier for a lot of people, actually.
Yeah.
So are you still studying with the PhD or is that completed now?
No, I am in my last year.
Right.
So I'm doing my thesis by publication means I have to do my publications rather than the normal like monograph. So I've yet to publish a few papers before I submit the final one.
So as you write a paper, you get it published. Yes. Is that what you're saying? I see. Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Well, how fascinating and an interesting topic as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't really understand what people's PhDs are about, I must say, but at least with yours, I have a good idea. So the work that you're doing then at DIA, that dovetails quite nicely with your expertise and research interest, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah. Definitely it does. So it gives me a broader space to help communities to achieve their aspirations and to learn about, you know, their strengths and what they want and to help work alongside them and help them.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely my job at Department of Internal Affairs helped a lot to connect with the communities, to know them more and to help whatever capacity I can.
So you haven't been all that long in Palmerston North. What was it like when you first arrived?
So when I first arrived, like, you know, being away from home, I was a bit like lonely and, you know, I was away from my son. So it was like not very good. But after that, you know, I tried ways to connect with people. So I was going to events that I could find online, like in Facebook. So I went to the potluck dinner at Manwant Multicultural Council, met with people there. Then I connected with the network of skilled migrants, connected with, you know, people there. And, you know, every community event, like I went, so I found people very welcoming, you know, and I could connect to different people and know about them and what they are doing. And, you know, people were really welcoming and very helpful. Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yep.
And I think, you know, it takes quite a lot of effort and time, doesn't it, to do that on top of your studies and your work, to try and make those connections when you're new in a place.
Yes.
Is Palmerston North very different from your hometown?
Yes, it is. Like, one thing I found striking was, like, you know, back in my hometown, you know, shops or restaurants or everything would be open at night. And, you know, here I found, like, you know, after 5, it's like that's quiet. So that was a difference that I could find. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And again, a lot of people do comment on that they find New Zealand quieter perhaps than where they've come from.
Yeah.
And obviously, I've been here 20 years, even the 20 years that I've been here, it's become, you know, shops now open at weekends. But, you know, at one stage, shops closed at lunchtime on Saturday and that was that. So whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, we best not debate. But anyway, so in terms of your kind of move to here, are you intending to stay, or is it maybe just while you do your PhD and then you've got other plans to travel elsewhere or to go back home again?
So right now I'm intending to stay here.
Right.
Because I've been here for a few years and I've, you know, settled here.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Okay. And so you've got family back home.
Yeah.
And your son has now come over here with
yes,
you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was so lucky that I could bring him just like a month or so before the lockdown.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was fortunate. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
And so has he got his own little social life or?
No, he's just 4 years old. Right, so he's okay. In his kindy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But he loves the place. Yeah. Yeah.
And was there any kind of language difficulties for him, or was he not really? I guess he picked up English as he was exposed to other people at kindy and stuff, did he?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Because he was just, starting to speak and learn languages. Yeah. So he, is picking up. Yeah.
Oh, that's it. That's cool.
Yeah.
And so not so much longer at kindy, and then he'll be at school.
They'd yes.
grow up quite quickly, don't they? So when you, had to experience the lockdown, I know myself, it was quite hard to feel that you couldn't go and travel if you wanted to see family.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the hardest things for me. Were you able to keep in touch in other ways, on Skype and stuff like that? Or?
Yes. Yeah. So I was connecting with my family through, video calls and things, WhatsApp and things like that.
Mm.
So it was really good for my, peace of mind, mental peace of mind and well-being, because I was worried about them as well, because, my parents are old and, they have health challenges as well. So I couldn't go there and, help them. So that was bothering me as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I know my parents-in-law also elderly and in the UK, and it was the same sort of feeling that, goodness, hope they stay safe, because we're really kind of a bit stuck now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now when you sort of feel like you're kind of quite well settled here, are there things that you think that we could be doing better to help people settle more easily into life in Palmerston North when they arrive from overseas?
Yeah. So as a new person coming into this land, there were many things that I wasn't aware of. So first was the accommodation kind of thing. The other would be regarding health access.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any proper information how to enroll and things like that. What are the criteria here? Because it is different from our home country. So there you can walk in straight in a day and, book an appointment with the doctor and, see them. So it was different here.
Yeah.
So you have to either, go and walk in or enroll to a GP. So that kind of information that can be given earlier and kind of like booklets or something, that would be good.
Mm.
Or if someone is arriving here, some kind of like workshops around accessing health and things would be good, especially with people with different challenges, language barriers, and people at the margins. It would be really hard for them. I do feel that, I did have some privilege and, in getting things, like knowing things, but there are people who really struggle and, accessing health and other facilities. So,
And I think there is a kind of an assumption, if you like, in the system in New Zealand, that people will understand how to navigate that system.
Yeah.
And I certainly found the same thing. And what I also found was that there was quite a lot of assumptions that I would just automatically know how to do something.
Yeah.
When in fact I didn't have a clue. And the fact that I was coming from an English-speaking country was of no particular help to me, because the system was completely different.
Mm-hmm.
But the assumption from people was often that, you should know, how this works,
Yeah.
So I can definitely identify with that. Well, time is moving on, so we'd better take a short musical break and listen to some of your music, and then we will be back to carry on the conversation.
You can be amazing, you can turn a phrase into a weapon or a drug. You can be the outcast or be the backlash of somebody's lack of love. Or you can start speaking up. Nothing's gonna hurt you. If you say
So we're back on Making Palmy Home with my guest, Pooja, who has been here in Palmerston North about 4 years now. So just before the break, Pooja, we were talking about, you know, some of the difficulties accessing healthcare. And this came home to you in another way, didn't it, when you were helping a refugee family? Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes. So it was our first lockdown in 2020. So it was like, you know, everyone was new to it. You know, I was finding it hard to navigate myself because I had my boy and, you know, to get stuff from the supermarket and everything was new to me. So prior to that, I was working with refugee families. So I was really worried about them. And, you know, some of them, I know that they were really at the margins. So I reached out to some of the families to see how they are doing. And, you know, there were some families that had like health challenges. So one of the families, they wanted insulin and they didn't have access to it because the face-to-face consultation was shut down and they had this language barrier they couldn't ask. So they went there once to the center healthcare clinic, but it was, you know,
closed
there.
Yeah.
And so they badly wanted an insulin to get them going. So there was this Facebook group called Manvattu Health Information Hub. So I did, you know, get a picture from her daughter because she wasn't able to take it. So I got a picture and, you know, posted there where someone could, you know, find an insulin pen for the meantime. So one of the community members, you know, volunteered to drop it in her letterbox. So we got some and then I had to contact the healthcare center to you know, get a prescription for her. And, you know, there were other families that had the similar challenges because they often rely on community members to go alongside them to get the health appointments. But during our first lockdown, you know, they weren't allowed to like come like that, accompanied by someone else. So it was really a challenge for some of our refugee families. Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's what you mean when you talk about people at the margins.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of us fortunately have English and are well educated and understand a bit how to navigate the system, even though it might be new to us. But for people that are struggling with language barriers or not understanding the system, it makes it a whole lot harder when the challenges come. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So fortunately, they had you there to help them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've been doing other voluntary work, haven't you?
Yes.
Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes. So I'm a board member of the Manvattu Multicultural Council. You know, the idea was like when I came in, there were organizations and people who helped me. So it was time for me to give back to the community. So, you know, I intend to help migrant and refugee communities to settle down and help them in whatever means possible. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's such a valuable service. Mm-hmm. And you're really expanding it at the moment, aren't you, in terms of what MMC is able to offer to migrants and former refugees?
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit about some of the new projects you've got going? Because it's like it feels to me like almost every month there's something new happening.
Yes. So we do have community connectors now. So right now we have 5 community connectors. So the community connectors would help communities like migrant, refugee and other communities facing challenges. Or if they wanted to know something, they would connect them to the appropriate place.
Yeah.
If they are wanting like housing support or like food or any health access or anything, they are people here to support you. So we have been fortunately having 5 of them in ground. Yeah.
Which is huge because it's been such a gap, I suppose, maybe in service provision.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, again, there's been an expectation that people would know where to go to get help. But in fact, often they don't know or they haven't heard of the organization that is out there that can assist them with whatever issue it is.
Yeah.
And so having these people to help, I mean, I think is a superb plan.
Yeah.
Must be feeling quite pleased with it. It's really good. So do you think that there's anything that migrants themselves can do to help them feel more at home here? Is there anything, you know, what have you learned, I suppose, that you could pass on to someone else?
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, it is important to connect to people. So rather than assuming that you're not welcome, actually you're welcome. So, you know, if you go to events or small gatherings and connect with people, then only you'll know about the services here, the resources here, more information and things like that. So people are here to help you. So just feel free to go out and connect with people.
I think there is often that reluctance, isn't there? Or there's a feeling that, oh, perhaps, you know, people don't really want me to get involved in this thing. But usually it's just that people are busy with their own lives and they haven't thought to make you specifically feel to feel included. But as you say, if you're prepared to take a little step, people will often take a step back and help you, you know, along the way, which I think is important. So what are your plans going forward? So when you finish your PhD, what are your career plans? Or your, so you were talking about your dreams at the start.
Yeah.
So have you got some more dreams you want to achieve or some more goals that you've set for yourself?
So I'm very satisfied at the moment. You know, so I'm more into community and community development initiatives. So probably my PhD will help me and, you know, polishing my skills better and, you know, would be helping me in serving the communities better.
So you definitely want to stay in that community development type role?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's good to hear. And what do you think we could change to the way that we perhaps deal with our migrant health workers that would make their lives easier, or that would, I guess, enable their voices to be heard better? What have you found so far? I mean, I don't want you to give away too much of your research if it's secret or anything, but, you know, what are your initial thoughts on that?
So I would say it's important to listen to their voices, to invite them to the table, to have discussions around, like, you know, how, you know, they can help the communities here, and in turn, like, you know, how their health and well-being can be protected as well. So in terms of, you know, I have seen various challenges, including immigration challenges, being away from the family, not able to bring here, and racism in the workplaces, and devaluation of their qualifications and experience. That was a huge thing, because most of them had to start from level one, despite having like 18 to 15 years of service overseas. So those kind of things.
Well, that's quite challenging. I may not be well informed, but I thought there was some short program.
Yes.
Is that a new initiative, some short program where people can have their previous qualification experience recognised into a New Zealand qualification for nursing?
Yes.
Is that correct? Yes. Or am I just imagining that?
Yeah. There is something like that. But when it comes to the job market, especially, you know, the voices of the migrant nurses shows that when it's like, you know, in restaurants or something, they are often placed at lower levels despite having, experiences and things like that. Yeah. But in some places it's recognized, but not, because when you come migrate from a different place, you know, the first thing you get, you know, you exit with full heart. So that's what most of the nurses do. Yeah. And they don't know that, you know, they could negotiate.
And that's interesting. And do you think that you would be able to share some of your research findings with say, the Department of Health or the DHBs or, you know, to affect some change? Is that in plan?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So that's what I'm doing, like, by publications. And I've also connected to the research team at the DHB.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they can be well informed of what's happening. Yeah.
Very interesting. Because it's always useful to have research to be able to base, you know, requests for change on, isn't it? You know, so one person's story can be dismissed as anecdotal, I suppose. But when you have a whole body of work, it's much harder to say, oh, no, that isn't really the case, you know. So it gives credibility, I suppose, to that, and authenticity to the need to make some changes, I guess. Although disappointing to hear about racism in the workplace, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I think, and one of the things that has certainly come across in me doing the show is that many people, although they might not necessarily experience racism on a regular basis, have been subject to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important that we do kind of name it, you know, what it is.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, we're trying to accentuate the positive, but, you know, you can't just ignore things that are not going well. You need to also have a think about how they can be dealt with too. I don't know what you think about that.
Definitely, because when I came and initially, you know, I've been like, okay, you know, while I was walking in the road, I was told like, go back to your country and things like that. And I've had like difficult experiences in the supermarkets as well. But, you know, it's not like, you know, it's just few probably, but you know, there are other things like, you know, structural racism and other kind of things.
Which is kind of a little bit what you're sort of describing in terms of the healthcare worker welfare, isn't it? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's important work, Pooja, and I'm glad to hear that you're doing it.
Yeah.
And you know, and I hope it does affect some change, because I think that would be really important to see some positive moves for the better for people.
Yeah.
Look, we've come to the end of time, I'm afraid. It goes very, very quickly. But thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about your work and your experiences in settling in Palmerston North. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Lorna.
You're welcome. So, people, you've been listening to Making Palmy Home. I'm Lorna Johnson. And you're listening to Manawatu People's Radio. And you can catch the podcast at npr.nz/show/Making Palmy Home. Cheerio.